Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest this morning is TJ Wisner, the founder and president of the CPO Institute and several other companies. He is a successful speaker, coach, and an entrepreneur with over 30 years of experience in training executives, small business owners, and CEOs. TJ and I will be discussing his recipe for overcoming the fear of public speaking. Good morning, TJ. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Well, good morning, Johnny. I'm doing great, and it's good to be here in your mama's kitchen, so to speak.
I appreciate that. I'm looking forward to hearing whatever you have to say because, as you know, the fear of speaking in public has driven most people to do all kinds of things. I've heard people have self-inflicted anxiety attacks to faking medical excuses. So I'm looking forward to having you share your expertise in helping all of us conquer this fear. But first, let us talk about you. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Well, okay. Yeah, I was, I think really, you know, the thing that people want to know is, you know, I was brought up in a Baptist church in a very close family of, I had four other siblings. We didn't have a lot of money. We were really happy, very active in the church, learned a lot of really good values, I think, as I was brought up in a good family environment, and always taught to be involved in community and church and education, and always trying to better oneself and help others. And that's really what's brought me to this point in my life, I think, is that my mom and dad both encouraged all of us to always do whatever we can to help others. And and so that's a little bit about me. And I lived most of my life in Michigan, but I've been all over the world. Lived in Idaho a little bit, lived in Texas, but most of my life has been right here in the heart of the lovely state of Michigan.
Fantastic. Please share with us some of your motherly love experiences you remember about your relationship with your mom.
Well, that, you know, that's a good question, Johnny, and I know, you know, you talk about, you know, From My Mama's Kitchen in your book, which is an award-winning book. Congratulations for that, by the way.
Thank you.
My mother just was always, you know, God bless her, she's been gone now for almost 20 years, but mom was always a very caring individual and always there for us, you know, for the kids and for my friends. You know, even when I left the house and went into the service, many of my friends would hang around, and it was because mom always welcomed everybody with open arms, and she not only told us to help other people be more successful and help people when they were down and encourage people when they were up, but she did that constantly. It just, she was the best role model when it comes to that kind of thing.
What are some of the life lessons that your mom had taught you that had lasted over the years that really influenced the success in both your professional and personal life?
You know, really, one of the things that mom always taught us was if you need help, don't be afraid to get help. You know, you don't have to be alone in this world, and that really led me many years down the road, actually several years after she was gone, to start around this whole area of being your own chief performance officer, that it's really up to each one of us to be in charge of our own performance. However, a key element in my process is to have a partner, have an accountability partner, and that was something that mom was good to be an accountability partner for those, you know, for us, but she encouraged us to help others and get help from other people. And so that's a real key part that sets my, you know, my performance improvement processes apart from many other speakers, my friends that are in the business, is that area of partnering, and that was something that she really instilled in us as young children.
Interesting. I think that makes a big difference in terms of she being there for you. Now, I read somewhere that she was also a singer. Is that correct?
She was. She was. Both my parents were very good musicians, sang in the church choir, and encouraged us to sing as young kids. In fact, I was a singer and actually was paid to sing as a little guy. We traveled around the Midwest and did various gay 90s shows and mm-hmm. Christmas shows and things of that nature in some small theater groups. I was the little annoying guy that sang like a little angel, you know. Then when my voice changed, as soon as my voice changed, they kicked me out. I had to find someone else to do.
So when or how, in this case, did you find out that you have a talent of being able to speak in front of a group of people?
You know, let's see. That's a good question, Johnny. I think I learned early on that I was a pretty good communicator and a good salesperson, if you will. I could convince people to do things. And so, you know, teachers would ask me to be the student that would, you know, help others. And I was always the one that would volunteer to get up and be the first one to speak or the first one to sing or the first one to do whatever because I was good at it. And then as time went on, when I, you know, got into high school and then ultimately in college, I was always the one that people would want to have on their team if there was any kind of a debate or speech that had to be given or presentation. And then along with the whole theme of helping others, I think you have to be a good communicator. And I think all of us, you and all the listeners out there, because I've spoken to, you know, just a myriad of different types of groups, and every time I talk to the groups, I ask them, how many of you are in the business of helping others? Everybody raises their hand. I don't care if you're working in a nonprofit or if you're working in a dealership, people help other people. That's why we're here on Earth, I think. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, anyway, I just found that being able to communicate well and get in front of an audience, I can communicate well one-on-one or to 8,000 people. And if I get up in front of 8,000 people, I can influence more lives and help more people at one time mm-hmm. than I can if I just talk one-on-one. So I learned early on. I can't pin it down as to when I learned it. Mm-hmm. I think it's all been just part of my life.
Yeah. So it basically was a natural in the course of growing up as a kid, singing with your parents, obviously, in this case, so you've always been in the public. You never have this sort of a fear of being around people, and you are able to express yourself, so to speak.
Well, I was pretty self-confident as a young man, but I will tell you that I had an awful lot of fear. I think I learned how to deal with fear in a number of the things that I'm going to share. For instance, knowing your content or knowing your stuff. When I was young, I was taught by a choir director that if you've practiced and you know your song, you get up and you sing it and you'll do fine. And you don't have to worry about anything else because you're going to do it better than anybody else there in the audience could ever imagine. And so knowing your content and knowing your stuff, as I like to call it, really goes a long way in helping overcome the fear. And then, you know, a few years later when after I started my family, I was volunteering. I actually volunteered for our local United Way, and I told them, I will do anything you want me to do except speak. Because I was afraid of speaking, because I didn't want to get up and talk about United Way. I knew nothing about the United Way. I didn't want to speak. And fortunately for me, there was a brilliant young lady there by the name of Molly Stevens. Molly said, you know, Terry, you've got all the talent in the world. All you need to do is learn this content. You're going to go out and do a great job. Took me back to early on where, you know, my choir director said, you know your music, the same thing here. If you know your content, you can do a great job. But that's the first ingredient, I would say, in the recipe of overcoming mm-hmm. fear is really knowing your content.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What was your first public speaking like? Your debut.
Well, actually, debut, I don't know that I would call it a debut. I would go back, you know, that's a good question, and I think that The one that comes to mind is when I volunteered to be on the Speakers Bureau for United Way, and we had the first speech I had to do was in front of a bunch of executives. They're a small group of executives, probably 25 or 30. And it was on top of the tallest building in Flint, Michigan, Genesee Towers. And the podium was set in the corner of the room. And we were, I think, 14 or 15 floors up, and it's floor-to-ceiling glass. So I walked into the corner, and two of my biggest fears, height and speaking, were kicked in at the same time. So my mouth got dry, my heart raced like crazy, and I got sweaty palms, and I probably forgot half the stuff I was going to say. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've come a long way since then. But that was actually probably my first, as I would call it, public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm. It has been said that people who love to speak love to hear themselves. What is your take on that?
People who love to speak love to hear themselves. I think that's absolutely true. But good speakers and good communicators, and this is one that makes, I think, helps overcome fear, is you make it about the audience. It's not about you. It's about the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, you know, the more you make your audience relaxed and understanding that you're there to help them, you're not there to talk to them, you're there to talk with them. Now, you're going to talk most of the time as a speaker, but you make it as interactive as you can, and that doesn't mean they have to talk. They can use nonverbals and you look them in the eye and you really connect with your audience, and if you make it about them, it'll make you feel a lot more comfortable. Again, that's another key ingredient, I think. But I think people that like to hear themselves talk and want to become speakers aren't going to be very effective, I don't think. I have not seen too many that are very effective. And most of my friends in the National Speakers Association that make a living out of this game, they always make it about the audience. They really do.
Very interesting. What was the largest number of people you've spoken to?
The largest number of people. Okay, in one audience, I spoke out in Las Vegas at a large group of 8,000 people, a little over 8,000 mm-hmm. people. And then, you know, as you asked the question, the first thing that popped into my mind is, mm-hmm. you know, I do a number of association meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, much smaller groups of CEOs and things of that nature. So I know I did one, a couple of years ago out in Connecticut at the, I just went blank at the casino just north of mm-hmm. New York City a little ways. And there were, I mean, like 80 or so CEOs there, but those CEOs reach out and touch thousands and thousands, in some cases hundreds of thousands of lives. And so, you know, even though you may be speaking to only 100 people, it's what do they take with them? And again, if you give them something to take away from your speech, mm-hmm. it's not just you up there performing, you're
right.
going to give them something so they can take it on and pass it on to other people and help them, just like this list of things. Some of your listeners are going to hear this, and they're going to turn around and share it with their kids that are going to school, or they're going to share it with their friends at work that are going to do a presentation later in the week. And,
mm-hmm.
So when you ask about the largest audience, you know, the largest in physical audience was 8,000, but mm-hmm. that one audience with 80 people, probably I touched hundreds of thousands of lives with that thing. Does
right.
that make sense, what I'm saying,
well, yeah,
John?
Yeah, very much so,
okay.
because they carry on the message that you have, continue into their various organizations and so forth. Now, in your years of speaking in public, any speaking bloopers and follies you would like to share with us?
How long is this show? You know, let's see. Well, I'll tell you the truth. One of the things, I go back up to that 8,000, when you're talking to a group of 8,000 people, and the spotlights are on you, and they've got the great big huge screens. There were actually four screens. I don't know. I think they're like 20 foot by 35 feet, 38 feet, something like that. And there's four of them behind you. And every time you move a facial muscle, it shows up on that big screen, and you see it out of the corner of your eye.
Mm-hmm.
that can really throw you off a little bit. Now, I didn't have any bloopers that night, but I think of, there's all kinds of technical things that can go wrong. I mean, stuff happens when you get on stage. I mean, let's face it, stuff happens all the time. You've probably had things go wrong with this radio show. People have had things go wrong this morning at work. I saw on Facebook yesterday one of my friends, first thing in the morning, she knocked her cup of coffee over and went all over the computer, all of her paperwork and everything. Things go wrong in our life. That's just life, and it happens. So as a speaker, you need to be prepared for the fact that that is going to happen. So when you get in front of a group doing your presentation at work or doing a speech, whatever it is, you got to just be comfortable with the fact that things are going to go wrong once in a while. And when they do, you try to be as best prepared. For instance, I think of one time years ago when my PowerPoint went out, and I just started, and all of a sudden, boom, the PowerPoint projector went out. There was no lamp backup, and so I had to do my presentation without the PowerPoint. Now, I prepared and practiced enough to be prepared for that, but it still threw me off when it happens. And again, the audience gets uncomfortable when that happens because they don't want to see – people don't want to see people fail. They want to see people be successful. Mm-hmm. So the more you can make them feel comfortable that, oh, well, stuff happens. Let's move on with it. Don't worry about it. I'll make this thing work, and you move along. Then immediately they feel comfortable. You'll feel better about it, and you move on. I think about when you ask the question of bloopers. I was doing a multinational presentation to a group of sales executives a few years back, probably 4 or 5 years ago, and I have a piece that I talk about with sales professionals around the difference between features and benefits, because most salespeople don't get it. Many marketing people don't get it. A lot of advertising people don't get it. And I think it's really critical when you're in that conversation with your customer to understand the difference. And so I talk about that, and I think there were people that were from 7 different countries, from South America to Asian Indian to even a couple of African nations were there, and everyone had their own translator. So I was using the example of brake rotors because I've done a lot of work in automotive, and when you sell a set of brakes, you sell a good set of brake shoes will have shims with it, and then you talk about the shims aren't really the benefit, that's a feature of the product, and then you explain why it's a benefit. And I talked about brake rotors, and I had 2 or 3 translators look at me like I had 3 eyes, and I knew that I had hit a word that they didn't understand. And I asked the one young man, and he said, rotors? I said, yeah, rotors, brake rotors. Rotors? brake rotors, right. Rotors. I think, okay, what other word can I use for a brake rotor? And everybody in the audience was like, do a round thing. They're coaching me, and it was really kind of funny. But it took us a while to get through brake rotors. But even something as simple as that, or seemingly as simple as that, can throw you off. And you, as I said before, you just need to be prepared for those. That one really kind of threw me off, and I'll never forget it, because he looked at me and kept saying rotors, and I was saying rotors back because I didn't have another word for it. So, and then I think of another one that I did several years ago. In fact, it goes back to my days of on the Speakers Bureau with United Way. One of my first ones, I went to a school, and I was meeting with all the teachers and teaching staff and the administration, and they took me into a kindergarten classroom, and they sat all the school teachers at these little tiny tables in these little tiny people chairs that are made for like 4 and 5 year old kids. And again, when I talk about thinking about your audience, if your audience is physically uncomfortable, it's not going to be an easy experience for you, I don't think, as a speaker. So I knew right away that I had to take my 25-minute speech and shorten it as much as I possibly could. So again, knowing the good construction of a speech and how you build a good speech, and then how you just eliminate certain stories, take certain things out to shorten it to the 15 minutes.
My next question, it's people ask all the time, what is the most difficult speech to give?
What's the most difficult speech to give? I would say one where, well, either you're not prepared, but that's, and that can happen because people have asked me to speak at the last, I mean, literally, as I walk into a room, people have asked me to speak, and so you're not totally prepared. I would say the most difficult speech to give is where you don't know your audience very well.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing your audience is extremely important, and I would say, and it happens sometimes when, in fact, if there are meeting planners out there, I have a form on my website at the CPO Institute that kind of asks a lot of really what might seem to be mundane questions, but it helps me identify and understand my audience better. So I think that's really critical. And then, of course, when I'm here and I'm talking to somebody in Kansas City and they're telling me about the audience and they tell me about what their needs are and what they like and dislike and what speakers they've had before and all those kinds of things, and then I'm flying in and I have a delay in my flight so I don't show up until literally minutes before I'm on stage, it's hard for me to do that. I like to get in the night before I do a keynote speech or I'm working with a group. I like to go to dinner with them. I like to sit at a table. Often they put me at a table with all the executives, and that's not very helpful for me. I would rather just walk in and sit at a table and talk to the people that get it done day in and day out in the organization, or that's where I learn what's really happening. So that would probably be the most difficult speech to give. And then I think about back in my days in the corporate world. I worked for a Fortune 50 company, and I did a lot of presentations inside there. And there are times where you have to do presentations of giving information to your team or to your organization that is not necessarily good news. You know, if you're cutting people or you're getting rid of a product line, there are times where you have to give bad information in a presentation, and that's always been a difficult one for me. But again, if I turn it back into how do I help them understand those changes, why the changes need to come about, it makes that speech a lot easier than just saying you're getting screwed.
You do a lot of research to make sure that you know your audience very, very well. And in today's world with Google and everything else, you can do so much research before you show up. And that's the most interesting part about what you just said. We have a caller in who may want to ask you a question. Hello, area code 810. Your last four numbers is 7428. Do you have a question for us this morning?
Yes, good morning. Hey, Terry, this is Michael Hank. How are you today?
Hey, Michael, I'm good. Thanks for listening to the show. You heard it on Facebook, right, or saw it on Facebook?
I did. You market yourself well, and I look forward to hearing what you
Michael,
have to say most of the time.
Good. Michael, welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio, and I appreciate you calling in.
Hello.
So what's your question this morning?
Well, actually, I have a question, but I also, to your last point you were talking about, the most difficult speech to give, I've got another idea for that because I had to do it. I gave my father's eulogy, and not really being a public speaker, I had 4 days to write it and prepare for it and get up in front of a church of about 600 people, and I would have to say, in my experience, that was probably the most difficult speech to give. But once I got up there, for some reason, all the fears I had beforehand were gone, and people were saying, wow, you must speak all the time. And I was like, no, and that's certainly not how I felt walking up to the podium. So why is that, Jerry? Why is that easier? Why was it easier for me to get up there and speak in front of those people at that time?
Well, you know, Michael, that's a great, great question. And a couple thoughts come to mind as you were talking there. First off, just a little over a year ago, I had to do that speech as well, Michael. So we share that. And I will tell you that, I tend to like to tell people if you're telling a story in a speech that's an emotional story, you have to make sure there's what I call emotional distance. In other words, you know, there's been enough time so you can get over it, so you can tell the story. We've all seen speakers that get up and tell their signature story that brings a tear to the eye of the audience, and that's okay that the audience tears up. It's probably not good for you as a speaker to get emotionally connected with that speech.
Right.
My guess is you probably, you know, there are different parts of the brain you know, that control how we think and act and so forth. And there may be a part of you that just kind of shut it off and said, I've got a job to do, and you go up and you do it. And you don't let those, you know, you can distance those emotions for that couple of minutes that you're up there. I did much the same thing. When I got up and started speaking, I thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is going so well. And then I looked out at one of the funniest guys I've ever known in my life, my brother-in-law, and he was sobbing like a baby, and I lost it. That did it. I mean, as soon as I saw the funniest guy I know, or one of the funniest guys I know, you know, sobbing, I lost it, and then I couldn't get it back. So that, you know, I didn't think of that, Michael, but thanks for reminding me. That is absolutely, and I've told people, that's the most difficult speech I've ever given. So thanks for reminding me of that. But yeah. But
Go ahead. Well, I actually think I did block it out once I got up there and started speaking, and obviously probably the most emotional speech that I ever had to give, and I was recounting tales of things my father had done for, you know, people in the room, for my family, for, you know, friends. And it just seemed like I blocked the emotion out and went right through it. And there was one spot when I was practicing this couple days before. Every time I got there, I was just bawling my eyes out at home. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
But you were able to get through it here.
You know, yeah, and I got through that. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking, wow, where'd that come from? How'd I do that? So, yeah, that was my experience of the most difficult. Mm-hmm. But if I have time, I've got the question I was going to ask originally.
Yeah, go ahead. Yes, please.
Okay. I am unemployed, and I'm looking for jobs. And mm-hmm. I was invited to meet with a group of automotive retirees, a bunch of ex-executives and professionals mm-hmm. from my hometown area. They all knew each other or had worked around each other for years, but the idea of me being there was to get an experience and meet with these guys and possibly get some kind of opportunities out of that, because they all had different things going on in their retired life.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a group of, not a large group, but I kind of had to speak in front of them. There was, you know, a dozen guys there. And in a situation like that, where they all know each other, they all talk about things they've done in the past, how do you break into a conversation like that? How do you present yourself as, you know, competent? And, I mean, it's not really a speech, but I felt like it was because I was on the spot.
Let me ask you this. What I understand is that, okay, you were in front of about 1,000 people, right?
No, a
dozen people, I'm sorry. But 12 people that you kind of present yourself. And I guess in this case, you were given a few minutes to kind of do a personal pitch of yourself, correct?
Yeah, and actually I wasn't really given the time. It was called together as a group of a bunch of people who might have the wherewithal to provide opportunities. And by my being there, you know, I was supposed
give
to
you an opportunity
set myself to
them.
To speak.
Right, to speak with them, interjecting in the sense that you were trying to give them a quick resume rundown of yourself to 12 different people, perhaps, or maybe two or three people at the same time. So that's a good question. TJ, how do you handle something like that?
Well, was it a networking kind of – did you see it as a networking kind of an opportunity, Michael?
Yeah, yes, it was. And it wasn't, I wasn't speaking individually to these people. I was in front of all of them at once. It was in a confined space.
Sure.
We were all on a boat, in the same area on a boat. So it was a real relaxed setting. But my problem was all these people knew each other. They hadn't seen each other in a while, and they were talking to each other about things I had no idea about. And,
right.
You know, old jobs, old relationships, things like that. And I found it difficult to interject into that.
Yeah, not understanding all the environment that it's going on, and you described it fairly clearly there. I would say, Michael, that for me, I think a good way to approach something like that is, you know, maybe towards the end of the boat ride, because you do have a captive audience if you're on a boat, or where you're tied up to a dock.
Yeah.
Dock.
Exactly.
You know, so you got a captive audience.
Out.
Yeah, so you've got a captive audience as you're getting closer. I mean, for me, this is just what pops into my head. Again, it's making your audience comfortable, so you say, you know, I really have appreciated the time, and maybe key off a couple of specific things that individuals shared while you were on the boat, and say, you know, for someone, you know, young like me to be able to, you know, gain from your experiences, and I'd love to connect with any or all of you after this point in time. Here's what I do and what I'm looking for, and be, you know, perfectly open and honest about it. But again, as I said before, one of the key things when it comes to speaking is make it about them. You know, what's in it for them. So turn it around, not that they got to find you a job, but, you know, they can leverage people. They can help their friends that own businesses and so forth by bringing this great marketing sales guy, you know, to their door for an interview when they're looking to hire people or whatever, you know.
Very much so.
I appreciate that,
Michael, that question. And the other thing people need to understand, ultimately, we are all in the people business. I don't care whether you are a public speaker or anything that you do out there, we are all in the people business. And so we got to relate to people. We have another caller here, area code 843. Hello, you're on the air, and tell us your name, please.
Hi, my name is Rick Gutman. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Rick, how are you? Good to hear you, buddy. What's up?
I have a question, and it's nice listening to your show, by the way. Thanks for having Terry on.
Thank you.
You know, let's say, you know, I'm a certified financial planner, and mm-hmm. I often speak to groups and so forth. What trick do you have to tell someone? It's like you're in front of the crowd, you're really doing well, and you lose your place, or you lose control, or something happens that takes you out of your element. How do you get back in to your element before you start profusely sweating?
That's a good question. You know, that happens to me sometimes, too, and you're on and on and on and on, and then all of a sudden something happened, and you just kind of suck the air out real quick.
Yeah, it's gone, and all of a sudden, how do you get back where you get, all of a sudden you get your confidence back? It's like, how do I take two steps back and get back on that road again?
Right.
Any tips?
One of the things, Rick, and thanks for calling in. I'm glad you listened to the show. Thanks a lot. That means a lot to me. One of the things that I find helps immensely in that area is practicing. You know, really practicing your speech and having it down. Because, again, as I mentioned before, stuff happens. And, you know, the PowerPoint's going to go out. You know, the server's going to come in, and one time came in to change out the ice water on the tables and dropped an entire tray of ice water on a table of six people. And you can't just keep going. You have to stop and get back into it. So stuff happens. And the more you practice and the more you know your speech, you know, you can just lock and load and start over again. If it's something you do that causes the interruption for whatever reason, I think it's important to, you know, make light of it if you can to the audience. Admit that it happened. Don't try to mask that you, you know, just dropped your notes on the paper. Just, you know, go down and pick it up. If you can quickly think, and Rick, you've seen me present before, you know I'm pretty fast on my feet. I usually can come up with a story or a funny line that works pretty effectively to break that that tension, because again, you need to think of the audience. They want to see you succeed. So when you start getting nervous and jittery and you make a little mistake and you're lost, you don't know where to go, just physically take a time out, say, hey, hang on just a second here, let me get my stuff together, look at your notes or whatever it is, to get back on track. But don't try to hide it, because they know you screwed up. You know, it's kind of like some people, you go ahead.
Just break away for a second, step somewhere else, and then come back into it.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. You physically can move to another part of the stage and say, okay, now wait a minute, hang on a second here. Okay, all right, let's take another look at that. And physically move to make it, to make some impact as well. Use your stage to help that. Yep. And again, you know, to that point, Rick, and to the listeners out there, it's so often we as speakers get hung up because we forgot a point, or we think we stumbled over a point. Fact is, they don't know what you're talking about. They don't know your 10 points. So if you only give them 9 points, the world's not going to come to an end. And when you do your recovery at the end, or your summary, you're going to hit your points, you know. When you do, because again, in the last part of your speech, you're going to have a good summary that encapsulates those things, and you know, so you can cover it. But and I know it's pretty important when you're talking about financial things, and that's not my world, but I know that there are legal things you have to cover. So if you were to miss one of those, you absolutely have to, you know, admit, oh, wait a minute, hang on a second, I think I forgot to say, but this is so important, I'm going to say it again. If I did say it, you know, you with me, Rick? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, thanks, Terry.
Thanks for listening.
I'll keep listening.
Johnny's got some really good shows. Listen to them late. You know, listen to other ones, too.
There's
a few.
Yeah, I like this. I'm bookmark.
Fantastic. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you so much for calling in. But I do want to add something a little extra here, Rick, is that I think ultimately, you know, I know you are in the zone of speaking, and I've been in that situation before, because in my previous career, I was chief operating officer for a major company, and here you're in the zone of getting points across, and suddenly something happened and it throws you off a little bit. But I think the most important thing is that you got to remember that you got to get back to your own passion, who you are, and the true you. Because what happens is that, obviously, regardless whether you're talking about financial numbers and issues and everything else, you are passionate about it. You are truthful. That's you. And then don't let something happen that sort of detract you, and then all of a sudden the new you or whatever, that period of time where your entire persona changed, and then they're looking at you as, has this guy been acting out all this while? It's not real anymore. And that, I think, is the biggest fear that we need to have as presenters, because people are looking at us to make sure that we have the credibility of what we just said and wanting to say from then on. So I think that's going to be very, very important.
I agree with that. That you have to keep your credibility, and the number one thing is passion. If you believe in what you're doing, that's going to flow out anyway. But there are times when something happens, someone in the audience, something in the crowd, something, it just, where you just think and you go in the wrong direction, or you lose your direction, or you lose your confidence.
That's right.
And that's sometimes, you know, you have to pop back into that, and before, you know, you start, like for me, I start sweating.
We all do, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, anyway, thank you. I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, TJ, all right, please share with us some of your recipes.
Yeah, I thought that title, Recipe for Overcoming Fear of Public Speaking, was pretty clever, and then I realized, you know, the recipe is really different depending on what you're trying to bake or cook, you know. I mean, so it is going to be different for different types of speakers and different types of audiences and so forth. But I really think, you know, some of the ingredients that make up a good recipe are, because the ingredients, I think you'd agree, Johnny, and that's your area of expertise, but both my wife and I are both pretty darn good cooks. We're pretty strong in the kitchen ourselves. My point is that we tend to like to get really good, fresh ingredients. And so if you know your topic really well, as I mentioned before, that's one of the key things. Knowing your audience is another one. And the more you know your audience and your topic, I think it really equips you for being able to deal with things like Rick just asked. You know, where the hiccups, because the hiccups are going to happen. And talk to, you know, talking to the audience, giving them a really good dose of that you're talking with them and not to them so much, and make them feel comfortable, I think, is another key ingredient. And then, you know, I mentioned before knowing your audience, but knowing what they need. Because as you go in and being a chief operating officer, your presentations that you did were, I'm willing to bet, the ones that you felt most positive about were ones where you really answered their question.
Very much so.
You were answering, you were solving problems, you were helping people out. That's when you know you've hit the sweet spot, I think, as a speaker. If you get up and speak and you feel really good and people come up and say, wow, that was really good, I loved your story, I thought you were really funny, that was entertaining, and then they walk away and an hour later they can't tell you anything about your speech, then it's really a waste of time for everybody. Now, if all you want is an entertaining speaker at dinner, there's nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong. I don't mean to sound like a big down on a lot of my friends out there that do very, very well by going out and dancing or doing magic, doing humor and so forth, having puppets and whatnot. That's fine. You know, there's a place for that. But if you're really trying to add value to the lives of your members or the participants in your meeting, convention, et cetera, I think you need to have a speaker that delivers that. And so those are some, you know, some key ingredients. Now, you know, when it comes to actually building a speech, I kind of mentioned it earlier, I like to keep it real simple. I always tell them, you know, I come out with an opening that, and again, you know, I think an opening needs to have a give them a statistic or a quotation or ask a question. You know, for instance, if I were doing a speech on overcoming fear, I would come out on the stage and maybe ask a question. You know, can anyone out there in the audience think of anything that's more scary than getting up on stage? And, you know, and or whatever, you know, and just ask a question to kind of get them going. Or give them a stat, probably would be better, that says that 96% of Americans say they would rather get a root canal than get up and do a speech. You know, now that's pretty scary. I've had root canals and I've done lots of speeches and I would get up and do a speech in a second. So those are just, you know, so open up your speech with a good open, a good solid open, have a good content body with, I think it needs to have 3 points. So take whatever you're doing, break it down into 3 chunks, give them the 3 points, do a nice close wrap up that kind of brings it all together. And then send them on their way. And another key ingredient that we really, that I touched on, I think, earlier, is practicing. I think we got to that when we were talking to Rick. I think practicing is really critical, especially when you're getting in front of groups. And that helps a lot, Johnny. I think of the company I did where I went around and I did, I think, 8 regional meetings. And I did the same custom-tailored speech for their organization. And then when you do 3 speeches in 3 different cities across America in the same week, you start to think, as you're doing the speech, you think, oh, wait a minute, did I already make that point? No, that was St. Louis. No, by golly, I think it was here. You know, you start to second-guess yourself. That's when I knew I didn't practice enough. Should have practiced just a little bit more. So, yeah. So I don't know if that – I mean, those are just some thoughts about, you know, having a recipe. Really, it's all about the key ingredients.
And basically injecting your personality into it with passion, because that's what ultimately drives the message across, would you say?
I think so. And I say I think so because I think most successful speakers are very passionate. I like to say, and Zig Ziglar said it very well years ago. I don't run around quoting many people, but Zig made one that I saw him on stage, and he said, people miss success in the speaking business by 18 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the distance between their head and their heart. And his thesis was that you had to have it both in your head and in your heart. So you had to be passionate about what you were doing, and you had to really know what you were talking about. And I think that's a real key takeaway for people, that you can't just be up there talking because it makes you feel good. It has to really help the audience. You have to know what you're talking about, and you had to be imparting something that's going to help them walk away and have a takeaway that's going to make their life better.
Very true. Any special recipes that parents can apply to their children in helping them to make that first step in speaking in front of their classmates this new school year?
Oh, okay. So for students, yeah, I hear you. I would say, let's see. I think probably most of what we talked about, you know, getting up in front, knowing what you're talking about, you know, encouraging them. Don't make it out to be like, oh my God, you have to do a speech. Oh, I'm so sorry for you. You know, encourage them that this is a great thing. It's an opportunity to communicate to people. You have to do more of that today than ever before. There are all kinds of venues and ways people can speak. And talk to audiences. A good example is today. I put a post out there on Facebook an hour ago, and a friend of mine from South Carolina and another friend from here in Michigan, south of me, you know, were able to jump on. So there's just a lot of ways to speak. I think the encouragement, and maybe even bigger, is expect them to succeed at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's setting that positive expectation that they're going to do well with the speech, but basically taking these same things, knowing what you're going to talk about, knowing your audience, you know, be passionate about it, as you say, and then have a good open, a good body to your speech, and a good close, mm-hmm. and you're well on your way to being a very successful speaker.
How about for amateur speakers who are now looking and wanting to pursue a professional speaking circuit? Do you have any advice for them?
Yes, I get that quite a bit as the past president of the National Speakers Association here in Michigan. I get a number of phone calls, emails. People ask me, you know, after speeches often, how do I get in this? I'm really good in front of people, and I want to be a professional speaker. I encourage people that think they're strong speakers today to get involved in their local National Speakers Association chapter. It's a really good way to find out, to learn more about the business, and to learn more about the platform expertise that it takes to be a professional speaker. I also will say to people that think they want to be a speaker but they don't think they're very good at it, that I think they should sign up for Dale Carnegie.
Mm-hmm.
I've never sold Dale Carnegie, but I have sent hundreds, if not maybe thousands of people through Dale Carnegie over the years. I think it gives folks the kind of confidence they need to move forward. So if you have a really good, solid message and you're not comfortable in front of people, you probably ought to take Dale Carnegie. If you feel pretty comfortable in front of people and you've got a good message and you think you want to get into the business, get into an association like the National Speakers Association. And you can find more information on both those, I'm sure, at their website, nationalspeakers.org. And I don't know what Dale Carnegie, I'm sure it's dalecarnegie.com. And I guess that's probably the advice that I give everyone. But the big thing is to learn a lot about the business. Like I tell people, I say it jokingly, tongue-in-cheek, you can make a small fortune in the speaking business. You really can. It's just helpful to start with a large one.
Okay? Very good. How has being a professional speaker impacted you personally over the years?
I think, you know, the biggest, you know, kind of goes back to what I'm all about is helping others. And like I said before, when you get in front of a group of 50 salespeople and you send them out and they tell you that for the first time in 2 years they reached their sales quota numbers, and mm-hmm. not only did they reach the numbers, but they reached it in September. And you get an email like that and you know you're doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you get feedback from people. I don't particularly, and I know this may sound a bit arrogant, but I really don't get too excited about the feedback I get from people immediately after a speech because, you know, I tell some good stories, I'm fairly entertaining, people like to listen to me, I connect well with the audience, so they're comfortable, and they enjoy my speech, and people will come up and say, holy cow, that was the best speech I've ever heard, you know, because they're amazed at it, because people are afraid of it, so when they see someone do it well. But what I like is where people send me an email, and I always tell people, send me an email, join me on Facebook, whatever it is, stay in contact, let me know what you've done differently because of this speech, what you've done differently about becoming your own chief performance officer and things of that nature. And then when you talk to them 30 days, 90 days, a year, 2 years down the road, in fact, I just had a young man just yesterday that he attended a workshop that I did years ago on strategic planning, and a part of it was a SWOT analysis. And he said, he sent me an email, and he said, you know, I know you're a busy guy, and I'm getting ready to do this with a large group of my customers, and this isn't my thing, and if I had the money, I'd pay you to come down here to Atlanta to do it for me. And I said, you know, I just called him, and we, you know, spent 15, 20 minutes on the phone and gave him the encouragement and the knowledge and the wherewithal to deal with it. That's the kind of thing that really turns me on, you know, about being a professional speaker and how it's impacted me because I've impacted other people, which is really what my mama always taught me to do. So does that make sense, John?
Oh, yes, very much so. It makes wonderful sense in terms of you being able to make a positive difference in someone else's life. So that's very, very important. Well, where can someone get more information about you and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, probably the best thing, and I use Facebook a little differently than most people do. I use Facebook as a good tool to communicate with my dealership customers and my nonprofit customers. So, you know, people can see me, find me, and friend me at Facebook at Terry.Wisner, and I'll be happy to follow them. I would suggest, though, that, you know, your listeners out there put like FMMK, from My Mama's Kitchen, or some reference to this, because I do get, if I don't know a person and they try to friend me, I won't necessarily friend them. And that's why at a speech I'll say reference or pro or international paper or whatever it is. And then that way I know there's a connection. So if they just put FMMK in there, I'll automatically friend them. And then, of course, the website at the CPO Institute, the CPO Institute, or TerryWisner.com, either one. And if they go to the website, there's a blog in there. There are some resources that they can use that are free where I try to help people. If they just want to know more about the CPO Institute, how I help small businesses, how I help nonprofits, they can call me. Because only good people are going to listen to your radio show. I mean, we are attracting really good people here. So they can call me, and my number is 810-569-5858. That's 810-569-5858. Gets me pretty much any time of day. And I'd love to talk with anybody about how I can help them or their organization improve their performance, because that's really what I do.
We are coming to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with all of our listeners this morning?
Oh, yeah, recipe for living. I like that.
Yes.
You talk about that. I should have thought about a recipe for living. You know, Johnny, one thing that I end most of my speeches with and most of my shows and discussions and so forth is a speech or a poem that I heard years ago, and it's an anonymous poem, and it goes, "If we had a second chance to live the days once more, to rectify mistakes we've made, to even up the score. If we had a second chance to use the knowledge gained, perhaps we might become at last as fine as God ordained. But though we can't retrace our steps, however stands the score, tomorrow brings another chance for us to try once more." It's called The Second Chance, and I really think we all have a second chance tomorrow to do better at helping others, helping ourselves, and becoming better speakers by understanding, you know, what we're talking about, understanding our audience, you know, giving them some good content, and paying attention to these things that we talked about here today. And, Johnny, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for the time. This has been fun.
Wonderful. Very good. DJ, thank you for the great recipes for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Gina Baraka. She is a professor of English and feminist theory at the University of Connecticut. Gina is also an author of several books, a sought-after public speaker, and a writer for the Chronicle of Higher Education and Psychology Today websites. She has also appeared on Oprah and debated and best the authors of The Rules with her sharp wit. Gina and I will be discussing her latest book, It Is Not That I'm Bitter. It is a book about hilarious punches, limitless laughs, showing women how to conquer the world with good friends. In her own words, it is not that diamonds are a girl's best friend, but a girl's best friends are diamonds. For additional information about this show, future shows, and for my recipes for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Twitter/FMMKTalkRadio. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. TJ, thank you again, and have a great day.
Thanks, John. You too.
Welcome. Bye-bye.